It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Morena, Mayor Phil Goff, how are you?
Morena, Rachel, I'm fine, thank you very much.
That's good to hear. Hey, we've got some fairly environmentally themed topics to talk about today. It's just over a year since Auckland Council unanimously voted to declare a climate emergency. And I wanted to touch base with what's actually been going on since that happened. What are some of the concrete things that have actually changed, Phil, since then?
Well, I think the most important thing is that just a week ago, the Environment and Climate Change Committee, and we set up a committee specifically to include climate change in its title, that committee unanimously adopted the text of our climate plan, and that plan sets out pretty much a blueprint about what we now need to do to address the challenge of climate change, and it's addressing it on two fronts. One is what we need to do to reduce global emissions, and secondly, what we need to do to adapt to a world in which global emissions will mean that our sea level rises higher and so that the climate changes.
That's great that there is this being set up, but what's that actually going to look like? And have we seen anything happen in the year since this was actually announced, or is this the first sort of change?
No, what you've seen happen is the annual budget this year, which has become the emergency budget, has retained all of those provisions which in the next couple of years will reduce council's own carbon emissions by 20%, so that's quite a significant amount. And that's being done by a variety of things, not least of which is the conversion of our vehicle fleet step by step from petrol or diesel to hybrid and fully electric. It's being done by the conversion of all of our boiler plants that are run by gas to electric, such as the heating of swimming pools. And collectively what those actions will mean in our own budget will be that we take a big step towards a zero carbon council. And that
is there a deadline on that zero carbon target?
Well, what we want to do by 2030 is, and it's a very ambitious target, and I'm not making any bones about it, it'll be really hard to achieve, but to reduce our carbon emissions across Auckland by 50%. Now, council can do the things that directly relate to its own emissions, and that's fine, and we've already announced, for example, that there'll be no carbon-emitting buses purchased from 2025, and I'm trying to pull that date back by some years, if it's possible. We've got about 20, I think it is, fully electric buses that, you know, so the CityLink bus up Queen Street. I think there's a fleet of about 12 of those. There's 8 running from Puanui through to the airport. There's 5, I think, there, and 8 on Waiheke. So gradually making that progress towards converting our own fleet and our funded fleet from carbon emitting to clean burning. But there's a range. Look, I think the Climate Action Plan is about 200 pages long, but to just give you a flavour of it, you know, you start with areas, and what we've divided it into, what we need to, which is the priority areas, what the council needs to do, what it's doing already, what we need the government to do, what we need Aucklanders to do.
Just on that topic of the government, I do want to come back to that in a moment, but I did just want to ask, can you measure the emissions of across the whole city, or is it just council that you're measuring at the moment?
We do both, actually. We measure our own emissions, and our goal is to reduce those to zero over time. But we also need to measure what happens across the city as part of, you know, it's a third of the country's population. Mm. And a huge amount of what has to be done, obviously, is going to come out of Wellington. So what's our biggest problem with carbon emissions in Auckland? We've got a different profile from the rest of the country. It's that transport plays a huge part in it.
So obviously having an increasingly electric fleet is a useful thing, but what else is happening? And I just think people are wondering what's happened in the last 12 months since this was announced as well.
Well, you know, we won't have time in the program to go through all of our 8 priority areas, but, you know, the top of the list there, for example, natural environment, part of that is tree planting, and the Merrill program is to plant 1.5 million new native trees over this term, and that plays a role as well. We have other areas let's look at transport. Well, 43.6% of our carbon emissions come out of cars. What I think has been a real setback is that there's been a blocking of the fee bait to encourage people to purchase electric cars, and to put a penalty on high and inefficient carbon emitting cars, and that really does need to happen. You know, across the country, mm-hmm. methane may be really important in agriculture. Across Auckland, it's the car fleet. So continuing what to promote public transport, I mean, you know, because most of public transport, rail and is already electric, and we're further electrifying the rail line through to Pukekohe. We absolutely need to move on those sort of areas if we're to make a difference.
What would you like to see from an incoming government, whoever that might be, what would you like to see from an incoming government in terms of support for Auckland Council in achieving some of these targets?
I think the biggest single thing is that for every electric car, such as I drive, that's imported, we import about 60 double cab SUV diesel burning vehicles, and they're going to be on our roads for the next 20 years. So the quicker we can turn around our conversion of fleet and the importation of new vehicles to electric and to maybe to hydrogen, the sooner we can make a real and long-term impact on our carbon emissions. So that's the single biggest thing. I know that Labor and the Greens were both in favour of that. I don't think the coalition partner, New Zealand First, was in favour, and that's held up that particular scheme. But you need to create I was talking to my daughter-in-law the other day. She just bought a new car, and I said, "Why didn't you buy an electric car?" Well, she said, "Well, it was $20,000-$30,000 more." And while I'd like not to be polluting the environment, I just don't have that sort of money. So you've got to actually create the incentives for people to change their behaviours, and that relies on government in that area.
That is very true. I just wanted to keep on a fairly environmental theme here. We've had a lot of questions from our listeners over the last week about a disputed property in Canal Road in Avondale, where there are about 30 mature native trees, including some quite rare species, and there's been some protests there in the last week about the felling of those trees for new development in that area. Part of the dispute in terms of where it intersects with council is that there was a lot of calls that council should buy this as a park and turn it into a parkland to protect those trees. Steve Abel, who was arrested during a protest on the site last week, has said that the council's failed in its urban Ngāhere forest strategy and that it should have brought the property to be used as a park. What is the reason why that didn't happen in the first place?
Oh, it's called $4 to $5 million. We just, every time that there's a tree on private property, because we don't have the legal power to protect those trees, or we do, but it's a convoluted process where you can schedule particular trees. What I've called for very clearly, because I think it's appalling that those trees were cut down. I know the trees, I know the property in Canal Road, and they were beautiful stand of trees, 80 to 100 years old, a variety of native trees. But they were owned by a private owner, a family that's owned it for quite a few years. And the condition of the purchase from the developer was that they cut the trees down. Now, we don't have the legal means. We didn't have the legal means to stop that. So it's easy for people to suggest, well, council should buy it. If we bought property every time there was a tree on it that people wanted to cut down,
so what should happen?
A significant tree. Oh, what needs to happen is you need to reverse the changes that they made to the Resource Management Act back in 2012 under Nick Smith, who was then National's Minister for the Environment. He cut out the broad protection of trees so that that protection no longer exists. Now, it may be that protection went further than it should have, but the pendulum's obviously moved too far in the opposite direction. And now you get a beautiful stand of trees like that. We can't go around buying every block of land with trees on that people want to protect. But if you put sure that significant trees, and define those as you like, I'd make them the indigenous trees that, you know, were perhaps over a certain age or a certain height or girth of trunk, you can't cut those down, then you would protect that mature tree coverage. Now, you know, for Steve Abel's comment that we've failed in urban Ngāwhere, look, I mentioned before we're planting 1.5 million new native trees. Now, sure, they're not the mature trees, but they'll grow up to be that. We're actually increasing the coverage, albeit slowly, of the canopy, tree canopy across Auckland. We increased it, I think, in the last 6 years by about 60 hectares. We need to keep doing that. But would I like to see greater protection under the Resource Management Act for mature and significant trees? The answer is yes. And I've written on a couple of occasions to the Minister for the Environment, and he's indicated that that's something that they are looking at doing. But obviously, they need to move quickly, because when you lose the trees that are 80 to 100 years old, that's irreplaceable. You can't replace those. Well, you can't replace trees within our lifetime that make up for the loss of those beautiful trees.
Just briefly before we let you go, Phil, I did just want to touch base with another anniversary. Last week was 1 year since the eviction notice was issued to protectors at the Ihu Mātou whenua. Can we expect to hear a decision soon?
Well, that's now entirely in the government's hands. Council was involved at a certain point helping to see if we could facilitate some agreement there. Again, you know, we weren't going to stump up with $30 or $40 million to buy the land. And, you know, people are very free to say, hey, why didn't council spend money on this, that and the other thing? And by the way, don't raise our rates. So we couldn't do that. We had originally pushed for that to be kept as public open space way back from, you know, 2009, 2010. We failed in the Environment Court to do that. So the Environment Court marked it out for urban development. This is an area of land that's probably the longest human habitated land in Aotearoa, New Zealand. You know, people have been living there for 800 years. And I was sympathetic to the concept that that this is an area of special character, that, you know, that we should keep and maintain that character. The government is making some progress, but again, I think there's some disagreement within the coalition about what the outcome should be, and that's probably what's holding it up.
What kind of an outcome would you like to see, Phil, for yourself?
I'd like to see Ihu Mātou as a Maori settlement of over 800 years standing, developed in its character, so that this could be it's right next to. We've got 90 hectares of land there that council does own, that has purchased, which is the Stonefields area, and that's an important cultural and geological area. The village next to it, Ihu Mātou, which is small and reasonably sparse, but that could be developed as a Maori community reflecting the heritage of that place, and with its closeness to the airport, you know, you could develop stuff there, like, you know, we've seen developing at Whakarewarewa in Rotorua, you know, Maori arts and craft, carving and that sort of thing, that potentially could be a showcase of Maori habitation and culture in that area. At the same time, I think you could do a little bit of housing, papakāinga housing, so you can develop that, but maintaining its character as an original human settlement in Auckland and its Maori character in particular. So I think that's, you know, that's my personal view, but it's for mana whenua and for the local people to work through, if the land is not to be developed by Fletchers, and I don't think it will be, how that can be best developed. It's not for me to impose my ideas on them.
Well, thank you so much for your time this morning. It's always a pleasure, Mayor Phil Gough. We'll talk to you again next Tuesday.
Okay, thanks, Rachel. Catch up with you then.
See you then.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Gough.